Hey, it's Nathan Crane, director of the Health and Healing Club and host of the Conquering Cancer Summit. And today I am honored and excited to welcome you to a very special interview.
Dr. Daniel Pomp is a respected leader in the health and wellness space, educating practitioners and the public on the origins of inflammation-driven disease, which we know cancer is absolutely an inflammation-driven disease. He's an expert in fasting, ancestral-based health approaches, cellular healing, and detoxification. Although he was trained as a chiropractor, his authority is rooted in his own battle, having overcome neurotoxic illness and heavy metal poisoning using his own unique cellular detoxification strategies, which we'll talk about as well. He's a relentless self-experimenter. As you know, that's exactly how I've been for 15 years. I study it, I research it, I learn from the world-leading experts in the field, and then I implement it in my own life. And, you know, he's a relentless self-experimenter, which I think speaks a lot to his character and what you'll learn from him. Because it's one thing to research something, to read it, to learn about it, to hear it. It's a totally other thing to actually do it, to actually do the fasting, to actually change your diet, to actually try the different types of medicinal movements and so on. So he brings that level of experience, which, you know, we need nowadays, especially with so many so-called social media health experts, right? and he's really a true warrior of from pain to purpose. That's a mindset that he speaks about and lives by. And he talks in depth on removing the cause of toxicity and inflammation, going upstream and following a multi-therapeutic approach to health and healing, which, as you know, that's what the Global Cancer Symposium is all about. It's about looking at, you know, integrative healing modalities that are effective and safe, especially when you're dealing with something like cancer. His website is drpompa.com. It's D-R-P-O-M-P-A, drpompa.com. Make sure to go take a look at his website right after this interview. Dr. Pompa, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. I love the topic.
So I want to just cut right to the chase. Can fasting be done safely for people who have cancer?
You know, it can't. You know, I interviewed Thomas Seyfried. I don't know if you have ever interviewed him for one of your pieces that you've created. But, you know, he said something pretty dramatic, and he's in the field of oncology for almost 30 years, if not over that at this point. But he said one fast, extended fast a year, can decrease your chances of getting cancer at least 95%. That's a bold Wow. statement. Wow. Yeah, and there's reasons for that that we'll talk about, obviously. But yes, it can. But I do want to say at the top of the show, because every cancer is very different, every situation, every human, always check with your doctor you're working with first. You know, absolutely state that just to be clear, because, I mean, we know, I mean, certain cancers respond fabulously and others may not as much. So check with your doctor.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge just in terms of prevention, right? An extended fast once a year, 95%, you know, potential reduction of risk for cancer. When he's talking, and I know of his great yeah. work, I'm glad you referenced.
Yeah, he wrote Cancer as a Metabolic Disease.
Yep.
Right? And he did a lot of studies with, obviously, ketosis, etc. But, you know, in his book, he said that ketosis in itself isn't enough. You have to have a restriction. What do you mean by restriction? It is fasting, right, and fasting strategies. And I was blessed to be in a mastermind with him. And, you know, a lot, even in my fasting book, I really took from his years of just brilliant work.
Yeah, I mean, we know cancer is so adaptable. I mean, we used to think, right, the science used to believe that it was only a glucose-based fuel source that cancer would depend on. But what they found is when they starve cancer cells and only fed it ketones, cancer can actually adapt to thrive on ketones. They starve it ketones. There's two or three other energy sources that cancer can adapt to thrive on. Right.
Yeah.
So it has to be a multifaceted approach. It has to be, you have to address everything, right? The entire, you know, diet, nutrition, exercise, lifestyle, everything, which is, you know, all these interviews we cover go into all those different aspects, even mental, emotional healing, spiritual connection, all of that. And in regards to fasting, when you're talking about, or when he's even talking about, you know, extended periods of fasting, how long of periods are we talking about?
Look, I mean, it depends on the person. Some people can do a 3-day fast and get great benefit. However, some people don't fat adapt and reach, which we call max autophagy, fast enough, in typically 5 days. Now, look, that could be a partial fast where you're getting your calories under 1,000 and keeping protein at least under 20, depending on body size. Or it could be pure water. I do see, and this is my clinical experience, that, we see people hit deeper levels of autophagy. I don't want to say that word one more time without giving it definition for people that don't know what it is. That means that when you're in a fasted state or a deep caloric restricted state, your body will eat the bad cells, including potential cancer cells, bad DNA, just in senescent cells that live too long. It will and oftentimes lead to cancer, but it'll take those cells for energy and repair before it'll actually take a good cell. That's the magic of autophagy. So some people don't get to that autophagy state until a little longer. So therefore we have to look at a 5-day fast to where most people hit what we call max autophagy, where your body's really getting rid of these bad cells around day four or fourth day in.
And primarily you're talking about water fasting, but you also said like a major caloric deficit, like at 1,000 calories a day, for example.
Yeah, exactly. Walter Longo is probably the more modern researcher, Italian scientist, who showed that partial fasting, we can achieve very similar benefits, meaning anywhere under 1,000 calories. If you're smaller, maybe it's 500-600. But you also have to get protein under 20. Again, if you're smaller, maybe it's 15 grams a day. So that's grams of protein a day, and that's under 1,000 calories. So that's called a partial fast. I learned of partial fasting years ago from a Frenchman, Albert Mazier. And back in the 90s, I studied fasting. But look, I think that there's a place for that. There's a place for pure water fasting where you're really, just allowing the innate intelligence to tap in, to that autophagy and those bad cells as an energy source.
So let's back up a little bit. So that's obviously one of the major benefits of fasting. What are some other really key benefits people can, expect from a little bit longer fast? I know 3 days is kind of, I know in my experience, it's like that's minimum. 5 to 7 seems to be like a really good, let's call it entry level, really, right? Like to start really seeing good benefits, 5 to 7. I found 10 to 21 days is like where you're really, and not just water fasting, right? Like juice, feasting, cleansing, detox, a major caloric deficit, right? But what are a lot more benefits people can really gain from fasting, cleansing?
Absolutely. And I'm not a fan of juice fasting because it really does, one of the magics of fasting, is keeping that glucose down. So you go into autophagy, just like protein, right? If you eat too much protein, you shut off autophagy. That's why we have to keep protein down if you're doing a partial fast. Glucose as well. Glucose rises on juice fasting. You're really missing a lot of the benefits. Someone just sent me a study in the last 2 days that, they compared juice fasting with regular types of fasting, and there wasn't any as much of the benefit we're dealing with here with autophagy. Some of the other benefits though are, look, the brilliance of water fasting is you're resting this massive energy user of digesting and assimilating food. And the body just doesn't sit on that extra energy. I talk about it, I call it energy diversion. So it diverts that energy that it would normally utilize to digest and assimilate food, and it diverts it to healing. It's brilliant. So when we see people in a fasted state, all of a sudden they start retracing into some of these things, injuries that they've had years ago. Like, gosh, this left knee is killing me at night, or my sacrum. And meanwhile, that was an injury they had 20 years ago. It's kind of like, you take a vacation. And all of a sudden, you get to your honey-do list, right? Because you have more energy, you're on vacation at the end of your day. And also you have time, right? That's kind of what your body goes through, when you're not eating. So the energy diversion, you also reset your microbiome, which we know 70-80% of your immune system starts there. But, I wish we could fix that microbiome. and create diversity of the microbiome. That means like more types of bacteria. And that's really what's linked to immunity, which I think is important for cancer. But it's not so easy just to take pills to do that. When we fast, we actually stress the microbiome and we actually create greater diversity, especially after the fast. So it's a way to change, reset the microbiome, and it's a way to create diversity, which is really linked to immunity. Also, we, in times of fasting, which I believe genetically, we were all set up, we all need to fast. Today, we just, you know, have the pleasure, I guess, of being constantly in a feast mode, but I don't think it works out so well for us. We're designed, our genes are designed to go through times of feast and famine, I believe, but the famine is what we miss. We don't miss the feast as much. But what happens is we reset our DNA, meaning we take these genes that get turned on. It's called epigenetics. And, you know, yeah, it could be certain cancer genes. It could be a thyroid gene. It could be obesity or whatever it is. We can turn on certain genes. But during times of famine or fasting, we're able to turn those off. So we talk a lot about genes that get triggered via stressors. It could be physical stress. It could be a chemical stress or an emotional stress. But we don't talk a lot about our body's ability to turn them off. I haven't seen anything more powerful than fasting to actually turn off that DNA. So resetting the microbiome, resetting your genetics. Obviously, you know, both of those things have a huge effect on our immune system. The autophagy, which is getting rid of bad cells. And here's the thing. You don't just get rid of a bad cell when you go through this autophagy. You actually stimulate a stem cell and recreate a new cell. Now, why is that important for a condition like this? Because what happens is I said that you get rid of these things called senescent cells. Well, in our immune system, we call them immunosenescent cells, meaning immune cells that live too long. Now, think of these guys as like zombie cells, or better yet, government workers. They don't do a lot. They sit around doing nothing, you know, getting paid, if you will, taking your your vital nutrition, but they don't do a lot. Matter of fact, worse than it, they recruit other cells to do the same, you know, so that's not good. They drive inflammation. And in the case of immune cells, they drive hyperimmunity, which is linked to cancer. Okay, so we want to get rid of these cells, but here's the best part is we trigger a stem cell and we recreate a new immune cell that's vibrant, that's actually doing its job. It's working for you, not driving inflammation and hyperimmunity and leading to cancer. So that's yet another benefit of what happens during a fasting state.
Yeah, I mean, just those alone, and you spoke quite a bit on the immune system as well, I mean, are incredible benefits for anyone dealing with cancer. We know that a strong immune system, I mean, Dr. Thomas Lodi, a great colleague and friend, somebody I've worked with for years now, I mean, he says it in my documentary about cancer. He says, you know, there is a cure for cancer. It's called the immune system. And we know when you have a strong immune system, you have a functioning lymphatic system, you have your immune cells, a strong microflora, all of these things contribute to your body getting rid of cancer by itself. That's what it's designed to do. So, I mean, all those benefits you just named alone are worth, you know, deeper exploration for people, certainly, who have cancer that are considering fasting. I do want to mention real quick, you know, when I said juicing, I should have clarified for people who are tuning in, you know, especially with cancer, I'm specifically talking about green vegetable juicing, right? Which is low to no glycemic index with all the healing benefits from that kind of juicing. So we're not talking about juicing beets and apples and oranges and things like that. It's cruciferous vegetables. It's high water content vegetables, right? Those kinds of things. So we know all the healing properties there. And I don't know if this study that you referenced earlier had, you know, fruits in it as well, or if it was just vegetable based.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you can have, I mean, in a partial fast, right? You can have a little bit of fruit. We try to keep the carbs under 50, you know, in a day's time. Yeah, so I would put that in the green fast in the category of partial fasting, right? And there's benefit to it. And you're right. You know, you can just, you know, juicing carbohydrate, you know, a lot of juice. When people think of juice, unfortunately, you know, they're thinking of the yummy juices, right? You know, with all the glucose and not the green stuff.
Right, right. I thought I better clarify that because it's important when you have cancer, especially if you're juicing fruit, then you're getting massive amounts of additional sugar without the fiber
that your body actually doesn't need when you have cancer, right? So anyway.
Exactly. And I think that's why, you know, some really strict partial fasters would say, no, you want some fiber, not just the juice, right? You know, you're better off eating to get to those calories. You have to be careful because you can, with juice of any type, you can get to increase calories pretty fast.
Right.
You know, so, you know, it's, you don't want to just, you know, again, you want to use your calories wisely, but, you know, and then on the length of the fast, I don't want people to be intimidated, you know, that you have to do a super long fast. That may come with time or body mass. You know, a lot of people don't have enough body mass to fast for a certain period of time. Therefore, we've learned that shorter fasts, multiple fasts, so multiple 5-day fasts can actually be extremely beneficial. You know, and I just clinically did that years ago, knowing that people even mentally can't even think about not eating for a week or 2 weeks oftentimes, right? So we kind of chunk it down as a small goal. But, you know, we've learned now with new science, Valter Longo and others, we seem to hit this max autophagy at day 4. And then day 5, we have this max growth hormone rise. So if we kind of utilize that max time and do it multiple times, once a month, every other month, give the body time to recover. And there's a principle of what I call diet variation in there, where you can come out of a fast and you need a couple of days. You always break a fast very slowly because your microbiome has to readjust your digestive enzymes, et cetera. But after that, we move to higher protein and we stimulate a different pathway. One is called autophagy, we discuss on the fast. But this pathway, when you're doing high protein, is called mTOR. mTOR is an anabolic pathway that for some people, now again, if you have cancer, it may not be a good idea, but for some people, it's magic doing feast, famine, right? So mTOR stimulation long-term, people would argue leads to anti-aging. It can feed cancer cells, right? But short-term bursts of it can actually be healing. But again, you know, everyone's a little bit different. But the bottom line is, even without the mTOR stimulation going higher protein, by the way, you can stimulate that with high carbs, high protein, or high calorie. You see its opposite pathways. But even still, if you did a fast, waited a little bit, and then did another fast in a month or two, then another fast, what happens is every fast, you seem to get higher, deeper levels of autophagy and all those benefits that I said. It seemed like get more and more and more with each fast. So instead of just setting out like to do this one fast in the expectation of, okay, I'm going to have all these amazing results with one fast, we found that shorter multiple fasts, you kind of just build on each one. And it's easier to think about it that way instead of saying, okay, 21 days. Yeah, right. So anyway, hope that helps people.
I think it does because it's also, you're looking at a total, you know, a lifestyle shift, if you will, whereas often people will go on a cleanse or a fast. And they're like, okay, I'm cleaned out. I can go back to my old ways of eating. But if you're looking at this as a long-term thing, it says, no, I'm going to do this every month, every 2 months. And part of it is because I'm shifting what I'm putting into my body. I'm cleaning it out for the long term. I want to put only good nutritional things in before, during, if you're doing, you know, cleanses or partial fasts, and obviously after, because the worse you eat between these fasting periods. And there was a period of a number of years where I was doing different kinds of fasts and cleanses and detox, you know, 6, 7, 10 times a year, as experimenting with all of these. It's true. Like you start to desire, you start to salivate over healthier foods. You know, it's like the broccoli you hated as a kid. It's like, now you can't get enough of it. Yeah. You know, I take handfuls of spinach every day and I put it on everything. And you know, I make big, huge salads now. And it's like, I never used to do that. I never used to even want it. Right.
Absolutely.
I really believe the cleaner you get, the more your, you know, microflora is telling you, hey, we need this. We need that. We need carrots. We need these healthy things.
My son, Simon, he saw this. It's a true story. And I have this story in my book, but I was preparing for a lecture and he saw a before and after of a girl who had severe psoriasis, eczema. I mean, she was in an autoimmune state, even for other conditions. But he saw the before and after and he says, what is that? And, you know, and I said, explained to him what it was. And how did she fix it? And the odd thing was, is he had, this is my last youngest son. So he didn't follow the pump program like the other kids did, right? He had some psoriasis on his head starting in a couple places on his body. And when I identified, oh, that's what you have, but way worse, you know, he left the room and he came back and said, I'm going to fast. And, you know, and I said, well, you know, let's be clear. You know, anyways, bottom line is I didn't think he'd make it. I didn't think he'd not eat dinner that night. Okay. Then when he woke up and went through with that, he ended up going 11 days. And now again, this son was overweight, so he was able to go 11 days, but it transferred to your point. It transformed his palate. He was carb addicted and he was never carb addicted anymore. If you saw him today, he's lean, he's thin, and that changed him. He went from this overweight child with carb addiction to a thinner child. Now, again, you know, that's what broke the addiction. And then his weight just kept coming off after the fast. So yeah, really good point that, you know, that you made, that fasting goes beyond just the physical benefits. You know, it can change the palate. You know, also I always tell people when they fast, you know, this is when you look, every religion on the planet disagrees about everything, even prayer, except one thing, fasting. Mm-hmm. They all talk about fasting. Now, therefore, there must be something here, right? So there's a mental component to fasting that can transform, as we pointed out, just in one area, but many other areas as well. I will fast when I need breakthrough for something, either for myself, my family, or just in general. I'm looking for an answer. I want God to move. You know, I fast and I expect it. And by the way, that's biblical. And I, in my book, I talked about the story of Jehoshaphat, where there was three massive armies coming against Israel. And Jehoshaphat was the king at that time. And like many places in scripture, he fell before the Lord, called the people of Israel before the Lord and Judah. And he called a fast and they cried out to God. And God answered on their behalf. And they literally, the three armies ended up wiping out themselves and they never had to even lift a hand. But I'm telling you, I've seen that many, many times with fasting. Fasting, you know, will bring clarification of ideas. I get ideas when I'm fasting. Maybe just the fact that I'm in a weakened state, if you will, but yet in the strongest state mentally, oftentimes, and ideas come. And, you know, and again, if we want to, you know, and again, every religion believes this, right? It's like we can move the hand of God in our favor.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And so speaking of, you know, what do your fasting protocols look like personally? How often do you fast? How, you know, what are your periods of length? And do you primarily do water or do you do, you know?
I do about four fasts a year. Yeah, I do longer fasts a year. Mine are 5 days. You know, I'm right at like a perfect body weight. So I barely, on a 5 day fast, I probably lose about 6 pounds and probably three of it's water, right? And I tap into some visceral fat and some, you know, fat systemically as well. But okay, so I do four fasts here. I do typically 2 water and 2 partial.
Okay.
And in my book, I build out a partial fast. You know, Walter Longo, the scientist that I mentioned earlier, he has his prolone, which is basically a 5 day fast with box. Here's the box food that you can do. It's a great option. I prefer the one that you buy through doctors because it's just cleaner food, I think, in it. But in my book, I talk about how to build your own partial fast and how to water fast. Look, fasting is like, think of it as a stress, everybody listening. Exercise is a stress. Mm-hmm. If you adapt to the stress, you become better. You become stronger in every way, right? But we don't want to run a marathon, right? So if fasting, if you attribute that to a 5K, 10K marathon, whatever it is, something that's going to stress you, if you train for that, you're going to have great results and you're going to finish. And matter of fact, after you'll be stronger, not weaker. But you know, if you go into a fast not prepared, it's going to be, could be very difficult for you and you won't get as good a result. So my book, I talk about what you should do a month ahead of a fast to really make sure you go into it fat adapted. You can enter autophagy day one or day two instead of waiting to day four, you know, and there's strategies I've learned, you know, since the 1990s. So
what's the title of your book that has this kind of design your own fast in it?
Yeah, it's called Beyond Fasting. So it's actually not released directly to the public yet. Right now it's just in my inner circle, but you can get it. You just go to beyondfastingbook.com and you can get it.
There you go. BeyondFastingBook.com. Everyone go, you know, get a copy of that book so you can learn more about this, obviously, and design your own fast. I actually have been designing my own cleanses and fasts for years now. I started with one I spent 2 years designing called the Panacea Cleanse. And then I did another one recently called the Prime Cleanse. And they're more cleanse, you know, they're highly calorie restrictive, you know, high nutrient density fast cleanses, right? And this recent one was a 10-day. And I wanted to do a new one, one that helps people, you know, hang on to lean muscle mass while they're fasting, but also really get into the deep cellular rejuvenation and nutrification, if you will, with, you know, highly potent herbs that help to heal. And I think, you know, especially people dealing with cancer, I mean, how much should they really look out for in terms of just doing water, which can be very challenging mentally, physically for somebody who is already quite sick, right? But also could be very beneficial versus something that's a little more easing into it, which could be like a calorie restrictive kind of cleanse where you're also re-nutrifying your cells at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the book, I talk about these diet variation strategies that we do to create a hormone optimization before you fast. Because the whole idea of the fast is we want to get into this max autophagy. And remind me, you know, how to measure that so you can know if you are. But we want to get into that as soon as we can. So that month ahead, what you do can train you for that. Look, you know, water fasting, many people will say, hey, I did that my first fast and it was super easy. And, you know, so it is different for everybody. And I think there's benefits to every fast, right? So I'm not just a proponent of one. Water fasting, when you just do water without taking even supplements, nothing, you're relying 100% on your innate intelligence. That is the inborn intelligence in your body. And something magical happens when that occurs. However, some people are so metabolically not able to enter into fat burning, and I talk about that, that we want to get you there first. And then a water fast is very, very easy because you're just not eating. For me, partial fasting is more difficult because when I eat, I'm a train. I don't like to stop, right? It's like, it's hard to stop eating or drinking things. When I'm just doing water, I just stay away from the kitchen and I'm good to go. Okay, so, but my body transitions to burning its fat very quickly and I don't waste my muscle. But again, I've got myself there to that point, right? So you have to know where you are, because a long water fast, you could start tapping into muscle. Now, what the studies show is that typically the first 24 hours, you're going to tap in, the average person that doesn't fast, you're going to tap in mostly to your, a lot of it will break down muscle that first 24 hours. After that, now your body gets less and less and less because growth hormones rising each day, mm-hmm. and your body's smart enough to protect its muscle. So you really don't tap into as much and your body's using bad cells. So if it does take protein, meaning from your muscle, gluconeogenesis, it'll take bad protein. So that's the other thing you have to, you know, understand too. But to your point, right? So we don't want to just run that marathon. Some people doing a couple partial fasts where you're still eating a little bit is mentally easier for you, right? I mean, my gosh, I can go without food. Okay, I can have a little bit. Mentally, that's easier, right?
Yeah.
And once you become more proficient at fasting, for me, no food's easier because it's like, I can't stop eating. So you kind of have to know who you are, right? But also intermittent fasting daily, you know, your people know all about it. That's very helpful though, because you're going 12 hours, 15 hours, 20 hours without food. You're getting your body conditioned to switch over to use fat very quickly, which then again, it protects your muscle. So when I enter into a fast, I can end up in max autophagy day two, and I'm just massively burning bad cells. But again, there's that training that you need ahead. And intermittent fasting strategy is part of what I talk about.
Yeah, beautiful. One more time, what's the web link for that book?
Beyond Fasting.
Beyond book. Fasting. There we go. I'm going to write it down. So we have it for
everyone. BeyondFastingBook.com.
BeyondFastingBook.com. I mean, obviously you've already mentioned quite a bit, and I know this is another major specialty of yours. You know, you've talked about ketosis and ketogenic, you've talked about fat adaptation and so forth. You know, I've had this theory for a while and it's becoming a little more and more confirmed. And, you know, you mentioned something earlier that's confirmed this. I've mentioned some other kind of key researchers and doctors in the area. You said something about, you know, you believe we're really designed, you know, genetically to go through famine, right? To go through fasting, to go into fat adaptation, right? Because the theory I've had for a while, which if you look back at our ancestors, and you don't have to go too far back to see this, but especially like in, you know, when you're living sustainably off the land, which our ancestors have for millions of years until more recently, until the Industrial Revolution, and maybe even, you know, well, within the last couple thousand years, let's say, but where, you know, you don't have as much food through the winter, you know, and the food you may have stored may be higher fat foods, right? So as a survival mechanisms, our bodies are designed to go into ketosis, right? Our bodies are designed to go into some form of fasting or into some form of fat adaptation. Mm-hmm. And one, as a survival mechanism, but two, as we know in short-term studies have shown, you know, the major benefits if you're, you know, in that state for shorter periods of time. But I wanted to ask you, because there's two sides of this, and I want to know where the research has led you and where you stand on this. I've done a lot of interviews with world-leading medical doctors that work hands-on with cancer patients, and they're in the integrative holistic field. And they may do a short-term therapeutic, you know, plant-based ketogenic diet for maybe a month or two to help patients quickly see some results. But what they have continued to share with me multiple times is that long-term, if you stay in ketogenic long-term, there are major consequences of that.
That to be the case for every diet. I believe that's the case for vegan diets, vegetarian diets, keto diets, carnivore diets, paleo diets. I'm writing another book right now called Diet Variation. I do talk a little bit about this.
Okay.
Two of the chapters in my Beyond Fasting book. But diet variation, I believe, is really where the magic is for many different reasons. I believe, again, genetically, we were to change our diet. When we look at the science around when we do change our diet, major magic happens. You know, when you come out of that state where, again, ancient cultures were forced, let's be clear, to change their diet.
Right.
Lack of food, change of food, environmental changes. I mean, you know, harsh winters, whatever it was. But the fact is that our DNA is set up for that. We know one of the best ways to get diversity in the microbiome, again, diversity equals great immunity, is dietary change. One of the worst things we can do is stay on the same diet all the time. So therefore, I'm not, you know, picking one diet. I'm not a fan of one diet. My biggest thing is that diet change is where the magic is. So therefore, it gets better and stronger, no different than exercise. So anyways, diet variation is a strategy. And I talk about it in my book, but it's a strategy to really get our immune systems to a whole nother level.
I mean, I love that you just said that. And I'm excited about your book on that subject because, you know, I'm a CrossFit athlete. I compete in CrossFit. And that's a fundamental principle of CrossFit and why people who do functional training or CrossFit or whatever you want to call it or whatever forms you want to do, it's all about diversity. It's about adaptation. It's about change. You go to the gym and you go work out if you're doing CrossFit or functional fitness, and you almost never do the exact same thing twice, right?
You would tell people if you do, your results are going to plateau and then diminish. It's no different with diet. It's no different at all. It's the same reason hot cold works. Right, you know, when you go from hot cold, you get this massive hormone optimization, spikes in norepinephrine and decrease in inflammation and growth hormone spikes. Why? Because the body does the same thing to how it adapts to exercise when you go from hot cold. Well, guess what? It does the same thing when you change your diet. The moment you change your diet, you're getting all this hormone optimization and all the microbiome diversity and all of it. So, I mean, what type of diversity? I talk about weekly diversity, monthly diversity, and seasonal diversity. And it's a little different for everybody. You know, what works for me is may not work for you, but the point, what works for everybody is the change and making that change, these changes. You know, look, it's easier too, because I'm constantly changing. So it's easy. People are like, you know, how do you stay so? It's easy because, you know, if I'm doing this, it's very new because I was just doing this. If I had to eat ketosis all the time, oh my gosh, I'd go out of my mind. You know, I mean, you know, there's the carnivore, carnivore code. Yeah. Paul Saladino. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, there's some gems in there, but again, no disrespect to Paul. I think he's a bright guy, but he just like so many diehards, right. You know, think we should always be carnivore. You know, I don't agree with Paul on that, you know, again, no disrespect, sure. You know, here, but.
I mean, just speaking of that point alone, just in the plant-based world, I mean, so far we know of 300,000 different species of edible medicinal plants on the planet, right? So talk about diversity. The problem is if you go to the grocery store, the average accessibility, the average amount of plants that somebody eats on any diet is no more than 20. Right. So we're talking 300,000 and most people don't ever eat more than 20 different species.
I think it's even less. I read 8 somewhere, but yeah, yeah, whatever. 28.
You're well made. So, yeah. I mean, the takeaway here, obviously, what you're saying is diversity. It's changing it up. It's adaptation. But more important, you know, going back to fasting, you know, if people who are tuning in here haven't fasted ever and they're thinking about it, or they know the power of it and they want to do it, or they've been fasting and they're like, okay, what's the next thing? What are some really good places for people to start? What would you recommend to people?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that intermittent fasting daily is a great place to start because you go, oh, I just skipped breakfast. I didn't die. I was a little hangry. Okay. You know, you do that 3 times a week and you go, that's not so bad. Right. And then it's like, oh, okay. I went 15 hours without eating, you know, tomorrow I'll go 18. And then you go, oh, okay. You know, I mean, it just gives you a little confidence. Not only that, in my book, I talk about mitochondrial fitness, you know, meaning if we stress our mitochondria, that's where we either burn sugar or fat. Remember, our cells can only use sugar or fat, right? Specifically the mitochondria, that's where we make energy. So we have good cells and bad cells. We have efficient cells and not so efficient cells, right? As we pointed out, we want to eat and get rid of the bad ones, but we want to make better ones and we want to make our existing ones even better. If we look at a well, healthy, trained athlete, they have more mitochondria, but their mitochondria, if they're not eating, man, they shift over to fat burning quickly, right? Unhealthy people, it's the opposite. It's like, oh, we will not eat this fat. Matter of fact, I'm going to give you a craving you can't resist. So then they're getting hangry and breaking their diet. Or, okay, you're not going to listen to me. I'm going to break your muscle down into sugar. I'll show you, right? So, you know, we want behaving cells. Well, just like children and just like athletes, we better train them to get them better, right? So therefore, mitochondrial fitness, if we're just starting to go 15 hours, 20 hours, we don't just go into the gym and do your workout. Are you kidding me? We'd be so sore the next day. We'd be, you know, CrossFit. We'd die and say, oh, that's bad for me and I'll never do it. No, we go in and work a little bit at a time. Exactly. So that's kind of what I take people through. We want to stress our mitochondria, but we can do it with very short fasts and then go longer and longer and force the cells to burn fat than not. So that's how we do it.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, you want to ease into it. So intermittent fasting is a great way for people to start. You're saying 15 hours or 20 hours. I know, you know, 12 to 14 is like absolute bare minimum. Is there like a sweet spot where you see the most benefit? Is that like that 15 hour range?
Yeah. I mean, again, I think that we look at studies and we go, oh, we see some studies that show the autophagy can start at 15 hours. Look, some people would start sooner, right? Some people it may take more. So look, I think that, you know, we get met. Where's the metal sweet spot, right? It's like, you know, 12 hours is a long time for people. I don't know that I personally would consider that a fast, right? Right. But I think where I would consider a fast actually starting would be around 15 hours. 15, yeah. You know, just looking at a meal skip, right? You know, but you know, even going a day where you just don't eat one day, right? It's like that becomes easier and easier. But to not eat for one day, you're gonna have a lot of hangry people. Why? Because your cells are stuck as sugar burners. So it's not your fault. They just want to burn sugar. And, you know, so they'll take from your muscle and they'll do all these bad things, including giving you cravings. But we can change that. We can change that.
And changing it is just by doing it again and again and again, right?
Stress them. The bad ones die. I always say bad cells don't adapt. They go, right? You're either autophagy or simply your body just, you know, they die off, right? And your body gets rid of them. So bad cells don't adapt. Here's the good news. Good cells get stronger.
Beautiful. That's exactly what we want. Well, Dr. Pump, I want to thank you so much. You know, thank you for your time. Thanks for being here with us, sharing, you know, all your great wisdom and experiences. This was the first time I got to spend time with you, and I really appreciate it. I've actually, you know, I love interviewing experts who are in the field working hands-on, because I not only do I learn, but then, you know, we get to contribute and help change and save other people's lives. So thank you for the great work you do. I really appreciate it.
Well, you are a great interviewer. Thanks for interviewing me, because you're knowledgeable. So you know the right questions to ask for them. So thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure. And I want to encourage everyone, go to beyondfastingbook.com, get a copy of Dr. Pompa's book.
And I want to thank everyone for tuning in to the Conquering Cancer Summit. Please share this with friends and family. Together, we truly can make a difference for the future of humanity in ending the cancer pandemic. Thank you, and I wish you ultimate health and happiness. Be well.